Hi there. This is Nick Savvides. You're listening to the N. Savvides podcast. This is a show where we talk about the art of collaboration, of working well with others to do great, creative, imaginative things. Suppose I told you there was an event where people had worked on the following projects: Star Wars The Force Awakens, Avengers, Harry Potter, Peaky Blinders, The Wire, I Saw the Light, Godzilla, Pride and Prejudice, Deepwater Horizon, and Salem. Would you guess that we're talking about an event out in California, New York? Possibly, but not in this case. The people who worked on all those films were involved in some way in making some of the shorts at the LA Film Prize 2016. And we are talking to a number of those people on this podcast. Now, this is my festival coverage of LA Film Prize 2016, so it's a little different than the normal episodes. I talked to several people in this episode. Usually it's just one guest, and I'm trying to get the interview wherever I can. Sometimes the audio will vary. It's just whatever area you can get. These filmmakers are busy, and you have to get them when you can. I also did an insane amount of coverage, over 4 hours worth. So I broke this up into three different episodes. Now, I hope you'll set aside the time to listen to all of them because they're interesting in their own ways. And also, you get a better sense of the community involved when you listen to all the different perspectives and the way they interconnect. But I understand you might have a limited amount of time, so I've tried to organize the episodes in a certain way. This first episode, you'll hear from some of the people who have worked on the LA Film Prize in the past or who are connected to it in some way. We start off with the winner from last year about his film this year. And he was also the guy who worked with one of the girls from Star Wars Force Awakens. So that's kind of neat. And then part two, second episode, that is a little bit more technical. We have some effects guys. We have a costumer. We have a director of photography talk a little bit about the craft of the filmmaking. And even the actors who won Best Actor and Best Actress at the competition. The third episode features some of the more thought-provoking interviews I had and some of the films that really connected to me for one reason or another. It also features the winner of this year's LA Film Prize talking about his film and the inspiration behind it. It's also an episode I'm calling Hooray for Podcasting because, well, it connects, you'll see. And in that one, I share my concluding thoughts about the festival and some of my festival experiences and so on. I mix it up a little bit, so you'll get some technical ones on this episode and different interviews throughout. There's a filmmaker one or a couple filmmaker ones in part two, just for variety's sake, but that gives you some idea of where we're heading. All right, so without further ado, let's get to those interviews from the LA Film Prize 2016.
This is the N. Savvides Podcast. Hello, hello, hello.
We are here with the filmmaker behind Memoir, Alexander Jeffrey.
Hello.
Alexander, you've done a wide range of things film-wise. Give us a little hint of that, and then we'll talk more about your film.
Sure. So last year, I participated in my very first Louisiana Film Prize with the film The Bespoke Tailoring of Mr. Bellamy, and we were extremely fortunate in that we won.
You should add won $50,000 in cash.
Yeah, won $50,000 in cash and a distribution agreement through Shorts HD, which is going to put us on iTunes and Amazon and the channel. And that also helped us get the Oscar qualification. So we're in the process of submitting all of our Oscar information to the Academy right now to get the film in consideration for this year's Oscars. And then, we came back this year for the Louisiana Film Prize with a film called Memoir, which is a science fiction sort of action adventure movie. Very different than Bellamy, which was more of a period drama. And this is a little bit of a lighthearted science fiction action movie. And it's a pitch piece for a feature that we want to do.
And you also work on other projects and you have your own film festival, correct?
I do, yeah. I keep busy throughout the year doing film-related things, whether that's creating commercials for local businesses or working on other people's short films or getting hired to direct. And then I do run a film festival in El Dorado called the El Dorado Film Festival, and we actually just wrapped that a week before this festival.
In addition to memoir, you've also worked on, I want to say, two other films at least in other capacities for the LA Film Prize. Would you elaborate on those?
Yeah, absolutely. So I worked on The Verses, which is Jency Griffin Hogan's film, as not only the first assistant director, but also the editor and sort of an advising, I don't know what you want to call it, like an advisor to the director, working with Jency because it was her first time directing film. And so I wanted to, you know, be there for her, and she asked me to sort of, you know, help her out in that regard. I loved the script. When Jency sent me the script for The Verses, I thought it was a really cool sort of tension in a room, Tarantino-y sort of vibe. And then I also worked on Hangman, which is the horror film here, as the colorist.
And that one had an interesting old-time vintage kind of look.
Yeah, actually, they shot it on a camera called the Sony A7S, which is a very digital camera. And so when they brought it to me to do the color, I sort of asked them about kind of making it look like it was shot 16mm. And so we added some 16mm film grain, and we really desaturated the vibrant colors of HD. You know, we took it into a more horror, tried to give it that sort of 70s, 80s tone to the film. Almost tinted slightly yellow, but desaturated and grainy 16mm kind of look. And so that was, I helped them kind of last minute with that.
In contrast, your film Memoir has a very sleek, futuristic look. So what was the inspiration for that film?
The film or the look in general?
Both.
Both. So the inspiration for the film actually kind of harks back a few years ago. I had an idea for a time travel movie about a son who wants to go back in time to be with his mother before she dies. And when I reconnected with Paul Peterson, who wrote The Bespoke Tailoring of Mr. Bellamy last year, and he wrote Memoir and also stars in Memoir this year, he had just lost his mother to cancer.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't realize that.
He had. And so I talked to him about this idea, and I didn't want to be insensitive in broaching the topic, but I said, you know, really, you're the perfect person to write this if you want to. And he did want to. He wanted to explore those things, and I grew up loving Star Wars, and so I really wanted to make a film that felt like the original Star Wars movies to me, that was fun, adventurous, funny. Because if you remember in like the 1977 Star Wars movie, Han Solo is really funny. You know, some of the funniest moments in the movie and the most kind of adventurous movies moments in the movie come from him. And so, yeah, that was sort of the basic inspiration for it. And then when Joel Froom and I, the cinematographer, were talking about the look of the film, we wanted it to have a very polished Hollywood feel to it, which was a contrast to what we did with Bellamy, which is much more gritty and handheld. And this had a much sleeker approach, more static, more really specific shots and compositions.
Speaking of Star Wars, yeah. I understand a certain cast member is in a certain Star Wars film. How did that come about? And tell us more.
Yeah, so our young actress who plays Obi in the film, who's the 9-year-old who comes back to the present claiming to be from 2068, she played young Rey in Star Wars The Force Awakens. So Rey, of course, being the main character, played by Daisy Ridley, in the flashback sequences in the film, the young version of Rey getting dropped off on the planet of Jakku is played by Kaylee. And so I saw Star Wars, and weirdly enough, one of my friends in Arkansas had a family connection to Kaylee. And so I reached out to her manager. I mentioned the family connection, and he read the script and, you know, really liked the part for her as she's growing and trying to get more work. He really wanted her to have a leading part or like a more prominent speaking role in a film. And so it really worked out that he liked the script and that her schedule allowed us to shoot with her for the summer.
Wait, was she accessible after Star Wars fame, or did you have to use pretty much all of your 50 grand from last year to...
No, actually, monetarily, it wasn't like a huge setback. I mean, we did pay her because she's a professional actress and deserves to be paid. But no, it was the whole project itself. I think we raised about $30,000 to make it, and then we got the film prize grant from last year for the $3,000. So it ended up being a total budget of $33,000.
Well, that's generous of you to share.
I don't mind. I mean, listeners who are interested, you know, most of the short film budget was spent on making the set, and I'm cool to say the numbers because it's like, you know, people are curious what these things cost, and doing something of this scale, really, to do it for as low as we did was kind of crazy because we pulled a lot of favors. You know, something like this would have actually probably cost us closer to 60 had we done it. Like, you know, pay everybody what they're worth and not pull the favors, just pay for everything that you get. But we were able to pull enough favors to do it for about half that.
Yeah, it does have that very polished feel. And it is helpful for our filmmaker listeners to get a sense of what it entails.
Yeah, like shooting this with friends on the weekend, probably, whereas like a more of a family drama, you could probably scrounge together a camera and actors and stuff like that and put a really good script in and do it, whereas this one really required like the set deck and the costumes and the props and really all encompassing to kind of create the sci-fi world that we wanted to live in.
And you said you want this to be a feature possibly.
Yeah, so the whole point really in making this short was to use it as a pitch vehicle for the feature that we have written, also titled Memoir right now. And so we want to basically use this as a proof of concept to show producers and studios and you know, whoever, that this is kind of what it tonally feels like, and this is the world, this is the characters, and, you know, hope that they can get into it and then want to read the script.
Are there some themes that you hope to expand on in the feature?
I think for me, keeping it grounded with the characters and the relationships and the sort of family ties is really important because that's what Star Wars was all about. It's a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. It's Lord of the Rings in space. That was the initial pitch for Star Wars. But it's so grounded in family. And I think that's what makes people so attached to it. And really get involved and emotionally invested in that. So I think with us expanding the mother-son relationship, his desire to get back to her, and also the relationships in the future that we don't know about yet that are going to happen. So, yeah.
Do you have some sense of loss similar to what your writer faced that makes it relatable for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I don't want to say that I've faced anything like Paul, because losing your mother like that, you know, as recently as he did is, you know, it's so sad. And but, you know, my mom had cancer this year. And, you know, when that something like that happens, luckily she's okay. And you know, she got really good news on that end. But when something like that happens, you really start realizing how fleeting life is. And so for me, this movie really is about living in the moment, right? Because we have a character who is stuck in the past. He wants to go back to this memory that he regrets with his mom. And throughout the course of the film, he really gets zapped back to reality and is told that, you know, the greatest things are in front of you. The greatest things are happening right now. And so I think thematically, that's what we're really going for with the movie. And to me, that really means a lot. And especially, you know, having gone through what I went through this year, it's like, yeah, you got to enjoy what you have while you have it.
Aside from the stuff you worked on, was there anything that stuck out? It could be a film or performance, anything that you want to highlight for catching your attention?
Overall, actually, this year, the blocks are incredibly strong. I really liked American Pride by Tamsin Merchant. I think that her writing is really spectacular. She grew upon what she did last year with American Virgin. He Could Have Gone Pro, which was the Memphis Film Prize winner, I thought was really strong writing and performance by the McGee Monteith, who is the writer, director, actress in it. I thought that she really knocked it out of the park. Ya Albi by Christine Chen was beautiful. My buddy Johnny's film, Man from Mars, I really, really dug. So I know that's not a short list of films, but there were several that stood out to me, and I'm really happy that the bar has been raised this year.
We are here talking to the filmmakers behind The Hangman. We have Colby Doller here. Tell us about your role on the film.
So I was the director for Hangman. I also co-wrote it, and I edited the film. So, along with my girlfriend Taylor, who is also the cinematographer. So here she is.
Hey, I'm Taylor Bracewell. I'm the cinematographer, co-writer, and producer on Hangman.
All right, and you all have developed quite a reputation of not just working on your projects, but on working on other projects, a number of projects. How did that come about?
Well, we moved here to Shreveport about a year ago for the Louisiana Film Prize. We've been participating for 4 years in a row now. And we moved here to build our network, and we started working as with anybody that we connected with at previous Film Prize events. And then it went from last year working on maybe 3 projects to this year 10.
And a couple of them are in the top 21 here, right?
That's correct. 3 of the films that we worked on actually made the top 20, 21.
The winner from last year's film prize, Alexander Jeffrey, with the Bespoke Tailoring of Mr. Bellamy. We got in touch with him. We worked on his film this year, Memoir. And then we also worked on a film called Somewhere Between Heaven and Hell.
Actually, Somewhere Between Heaven and Hell happened because of the film prize. They recommended us as producers for the film when they were looking for people locally to help crew the film. So they
because you've already gotten the reputation of we'll help everyone. We're team players.
That's correct. And so we came in as I was line producer in UPM, and then Taylor was AD and script supervisor on the film. And we also got the crew and all the catering for the film. It's actually one of the more high budgeted films for the film prize this year. So it was a big undertaking.
I noticed that Alex, the director, also worked on your film. He was the color grader and maybe some other things. Was it sort of like a trade-off, like I'll work on your film, but will you help on ours?
It was literally just friendship. So, like, and we help each other out, and just, you know, because we really believe in each other and where we're going for films, you know, and like, and he really believes in Taylor and what she does. And then it's a filmmaking family we've kind of made.
Through the film prize, we've kind of gotten to know these filmmakers, and like, I really consider them like really close friends now. They're like family, and I would do anything for them. Like, if they needed, you know, a production assistant or whatever on any of their films, I'd do it for free, like, happily. Like, they're so cool. I would do anything for these people. And I know they do the same for us in our films. So it's really cool.
You got to be careful about offering free service, because people are hearing this. They're like, I heard you say it. It's on record. It is incredible to see that, because I understand friendship, but also $50,000 is on the line. That's no laughing matter. So how does that work? You really want to win, but you also want to do your best work for others. Or are you going in like, well, I'll give you 75% or what?
It's all happy competition. You know, of course we do want to win the $50,000, but you know, if Memoir wins, if Somewhere Between Heaven and Hell wins, we'll be very happy for them. You know, the ultimate goal is to make good films and to move that forward with our future, because $50,000 isn't going to make us careers. So, you know, it'll be great to win, and we'd really love to, but ultimately we think about our careers in filmmaking first, and we put that in front of us.
You know, that's a smart thing you said, Colby, about $50,000 not necessarily building a career. It might give you a little nudge, but relationships might, having those connections with people might. So, smart way to go. All right, so tell us more about Hangman, a little different than what you all did last year. What was the inspiration for this story?
We're not really horror movie people, but whenever the deadline for the film prize was approaching and we needed a film to kind of put in ourselves that we felt would really stick out at the film prize, we decided let's just do a horror film. So our inspiration was the classic horror films we love, like The Shining or The Thing and stuff like that, and not so much the modern horror films. So we really kind of stuck to that, and that's pretty much where it came from, yeah.
I have to tell you all, I went in a little nervous because horror is not my favorite genre, and you all are nice people, friendly people, and I didn't want to have to be like, oh, you know, the film. But I really enjoyed it, and I like how a lot of it is implied. I like how you all play with shadows and low light, and so we're constantly watching for movement. More restrained, like you said, than some of the contemporary horror. Was that due to production limitations or in keeping with the vision that you had?
It was a little bit of both. We came up with the entire concept a week and a half before the deadline to turn it in. We wanted to keep with the concept, but as well, yeah, we had to work with what we had, and we wanted to do that smartly. We had no power in the house for half of the shoot, if not more than that, and so we kind of had to work around that, and I think that really became its own character.
It was definitely really challenging not having power and being able to light things properly. I think we had one or two battery-powered LED lights. We used all of our iPhone lights and just throwing diffusers on that, and we had some candles and stuff, so it was really challenging, but I think that it works, you know, like it ended up working for the film.
You all have some nice track-in shots where the pacing varies. It's a little slow and you're trying to anticipate what happens. Was that all done in the shoot, or did you all slow it down digitally? How did you get some of those shots?
We shot that. We used a slider for a good amount of the shots. And we tried to do that like slowly kind of inching, creeping forward and, you know, getting closer and closer to Nicholas, you know, the character in the film. And yeah, I don't think there was hardly anything other than maybe the drone footage that we kind of used throughout the film that was actually slowed down in post.
The only thing that's not done in camera in the film is the TV. That's all digital. That wasn't actually there. We couldn't actually turn the TVs on because of the power in the house. So, but everything else, the way the film is shot, the pacing, that's all. Even whenever, spoiler alert, even whenever he sees himself, that's all a practical effect.
Someone could read this as the main character going insane or possibly being under the influence of dark spirits. Do you all believe in the supernatural?
I 100% believe in the supernatural. I am pretty certain that the house that we filmed in had some spirits still kind of residing there. The last person to live in the house was a woman who was a recluse for a good part of her life. The last 12 years of her life, she did not step outside her home, not even to go on the front porch. She died in the house in 1973, and then the house was boarded up immediately after. It definitely had kind of a spooky feel to it. The lights kind of, when they were on, really flickered on and off. They'd cut off, and it just felt really spooky, but I 100% believe in the supernatural. I know Colby's a little more skeptical.
I'm kind of open to interpretation, but everybody else thought the house was haunted, but I was just having a good time.
We are here with Tamsin Merchant, the director of American Pride. Hi, Tamsin.
Hello.
You have a career as an actress. You've gotten a couple of distinguished parts, notably for these period pieces, whether Pride and Prejudice or Salem and some others. Talk about doing period work.
Doing period work as an actress is always, it's a challenge because you've got the long days anyway. You've got the, you know, the sort of 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. regular day. Add to that, you know, 2 hours of hair and makeup in the morning and wearing a corset for 12 hours. It's pretty tiring, but, you know, the production value is always really good. And you often, the roles you get are quite complex and they can be quite politically charged, even if they're not overtly political. And I find that very interesting.
Is there one role that you've done that stayed with you longer than the others?
Well, in a technical sense, Salem has stayed with me longest because I've been doing...
Right, you've been on that the longest, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, I think every role that I do, I enjoy for different reasons. And, you know, I did a short film once that was... I felt it was a time in my life that I really needed to express certain things. And I always enjoy being able to kind of use the work, use the role, use the production and the story to kind of tell... just sort of almost exercise and understand my own self in a more deep way. So I think every character in different ways has done that. But Anne Hale on Salem has particularly been fun for that, exploring what it means to be a woman and kind of self kind of realization in a way.
And joining us now is Cam Owen, the star and producer of American Pride. Hello, Cam.
Hello.
We were just talking about Salem. You work on that show as well. Is that how you met Tamsin?
That is how I met Tamsin. On year one, I was a set PA, and that's where we met, and that's where we connected and wanted to do a film. Sorry, my voice is going out. I've had too much fun at the film prize this weekend, so.
Yes, as have we all. So last year was the year that you all worked together for the first time for the film prize, correct? So that one was called American Virgin. Yes, yes. So you did that film, and now you did American Pride. Just on a technical level, it seems like this one is a much bigger challenge. Yes?
Yeah, American Pride, we definitely went kind of further with the cinematography. It was simple, but we chose our shots, you know, effectively for American Virgin. American Pride, we did get more experimental, and it was definitely a lot of fun to kind of step up the game with the amazing cinematographer Joel Froom, who also DP'd Memoir and The Verses.
You all did some nice crowd sequences, getting all those people together while you're doing one take. For a couple of those shots, it was continuous camera movement, and there was even humor in it. Talk a little bit about prepping that, because that is quite a challenge to do.
Joel and I had about 3 hours of prep for the whole film. We met each other the day before we started shooting and spent the day, half a day, because I got called onto Salem like randomly, half a day driving around gathering props together for the film. So yeah, we didn't have any prep really, but what we did do was have a couple of quite manic rehearsals with all of the actors. So I really love to rehearse. Being an actor, I appreciate rehearsal. It's something you don't get that often on film. I think it's a tool to be used very, very carefully on film, because especially if you're dealing with, you know, actors who aren't very experienced, or any actors, to be honest, of any age. You don't want to over-rehearse. You don't want to have that effect of an over-rehearsed performance on film. But rehearsal for some of those technical things is essential. I think you've got to hit that sweet spot of, like, a good amount of rehearsal means, like, you know, us to still have that freshness. So we did 2 or 3 kind of manic rehearsals for a couple of hours, like short, sharp bursts with the cast.
Kim, tell us what it was like preparing for that as an actor.
It wasn't difficult because I love the character. I connect with the character. Obviously, I knew the script inside and out because I helped produce it. So, like, it's like I knew my lines, but also I just felt so much connection with Ty. Being able to be this character changed me because it brought me out of my shell. It made me, you know, an actor. It made me feel like an actor for the first time ever. And I've, you know, acted in short films here and there. And I think a lot of it was just connecting with the character and just putting myself in his shoes. And, you know, Ty changed me as a person. You know, after I did American Virgin, it was like I would find myself walking down the street and I had a little bit more pep in my step because I got to come out of my shell and, like, have fun as Ty, which I really never gave myself as a person the chance to do.
It was quite a performance. So congratulations. You got nominated for Best Actor.
Yes. I mean, that's, you know, just being nominated with all those, you know, top-notch actors, you know, it was such an honor.
Both of the shorts that you all have worked together have involved sexuality to a degree. I mean, it seems like that's a prominent aspect of both. Is that important to you all to tell those kinds of stories that address these challenging topics?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't really want to tell a story that kind of doesn't mean a larger thing. You know, like, I think every good story needs to kind of challenge people. You need to come into the cinema, and then when you've seen that story, when you've gone through that arc with those people, you need to have changed if it's a good story. And I want to change people. I want to make people feel uncomfortable. You know, I want to put people kind of slightly kind of out of their comfort zone, for sure, because I think it's really important. I think film can change the world. I think it's a brilliant tool that we can use to actually affect growth for humanity. And I'm not saying that our films, you know, are miracle workers, you know. I think that the best films, the films that I want to make anyway, hold up a mirror to society. And even if people don't like what they see in that mirror all the time, then you've got to see it. Like, you've got to see your situation to be able to change it, even if you don't feel like you need to change. And I think our films are about change and about self-realization in a way. So that's what I hope people get from it. I want to make people laugh, but I also want to make people think. And I think that's a very important thing, especially with gay pride, especially with, like, young women struggling to, you know, to achieve their dreams. It's very important that people witness these stories. It's important that gay pride is fully accepted and celebrated in this country and in the world, and that isn't something that's fully happening, so it needs to change, and I want to be part of that change.
You all are addressing a polarizing issue. What sort of feedback did you all get? Was it mostly positive? Did you get any pushback?
It was mostly positive, but there were a couple of incidents this weekend that made me certainly have to pick my jaw up off the floor.
Would you elaborate on any of those?
The topic of the film, you know, people disagree with some things. And, you know, we had some people come up to me and, you know, just say, oh, I didn't agree with what you did, but it was good. And it's like, that's the whole reason why we did this film, was to show this to people like that. And like you said about the mirror thing, you know, it's something that people don't like to see. But, I mean, we're going to throw it in their face anyway. And but no, I think none of that really, it doesn't bother me. I think just because we are telling such a powerful story, and the response in the theater was amazing. Yeah. I mean, people came up to me all weekend praising the film. And I had a few people, you know, make some comments. And, you know, it's kind of just like, I deal with that as a gay man in life anyways. It's normal to me because I grew up here and I know how people are. So it's tricky. And I think we did well for the message. I think the message that we were trying to tell really spoke to the people that it should have. And, you know, if it made people feel uncomfortable, then, you know, that's great, because
yeah, it's a bonus. Like, yeah, people did come up to Cam particularly, and it's not something that I'm used to seeing. I'm not used to seeing and hearing that kind of judgment on people's lifestyles and on who they are. And that a couple of times I had to restrain myself with a piece of rainbow tape across my mouth. But that's the whole point, actually. This film, we're not restraining ourselves. We're telling it like it is, and we're celebrating sexuality in every way. I mean, I think American Virgin's quite different because there's a dark, dark side to that film. And we actually wanted to get away from the darkness in this film and actually celebrate pride, because a lot of films that tell a story about like the gay scene and stuff have a lot of shame attached to them, and it kind of almost feed off of that. And we wanted to actually want to touch on that, but not to make that the heart of our story. The heart of our story is love and acceptance. And I think most of the people who came to see our film loved and accepted it. So that's excellent.
The feedback that you got, essentially, it sounds like one person came up to you and said, I disagree with your character's choices. Was that the extent of it?
I only witnessed that one instance. That type of thing, it just, I hear it and it doesn't affect me whatsoever. But the thing that does affect me is people coming up to me saying, you know, your film spoke to me. Your film was awesome. You did such a good job. Like, that's the type of stuff that makes me feel like we did a good job. It's kind of like how I am as a person. If you don't like me or what my lifestyle choices is, it doesn't make a difference to me. You know, I'm still going to be who I am, and I'm going to be true to myself and true to, you know, the people that are there for me. And, you know, that's kind of like the same way with our film.
I think it's interesting. I mean, I guess it would be the kind of thing where I would have to see the encounter. But if someone comes up to someone and does it in a thoughtful way and just says, I disagree about this, or whatever it is, not even this issue in particular, but it can start a dialogue. Sometimes that can be interesting and important, right? Certainly people can do that in a bad way. Anyway, interesting to hear, but concluding thoughts about your experiences here at the festival.
Oh, it's been absolutely brilliant again for the second year. So yeah, I'm super happy to be back, and we've got a plan for another one next year. So hopefully you'll see us again.
This festival specifically is such a special festival just because of the fact that we get to bond with other filmmakers who are very talented and very supportive. And it's just such a camaraderie of filmmakers that, you know, have potential to collaborate in the future. And that's one thing I love about the Film Prize, is that it is just kind of like a big love fest between filmmakers and film lovers and actors and actresses and crew members. Everyone just appreciates film this weekend. If you don't really work in the industry, people just don't seem to get what it takes to make a film. And I feel like, you know, having all these filmmakers here, having all this cast and crew and all these amazing people coming together to tell these stories, I think it definitely is amazing. And it's one of the best festivals that I've ever been to. I will try to make a film or be in a film every year. It's such a special weekend.
We are here with Joel Froom, a director of photography who's worked on a couple of shorts at the Louisiana Film Prize. You are a full-time cinematographer. You've worked on a couple of projects. Just give us a sense of your background and some of the things you've worked on in the past.
Yeah, I'm a cinematographer originally from Sydney, Australia, but now based out of New York City. I went to the Australian Film School and I graduated from there in 2009, and then moved over to the States in 2011 to New York, and I've kind of been working on all sorts of projects, from features to documentaries to short films to commercials, or all over the country and all over the world, which is fantastic. And in my travels, I shot a feature film called The Philosopher King over in Sweden, which is where I met Alexander Jeffrey, who's a filmmaker who was the assistant director on that film. And then we shot a film for the film prize.
And hold on, you all met in Sweden?
Yeah, I actually met Alex for one brief beer the day before, because he's stopping in New York. The day before, we both left to fly to Sweden. But then we traveled around Sweden for 3 weeks doing a road trip drama, which is like the most incredible experience ever.
Did you all know each other beforehand, or you just happened to randomly or serendipitously meet up?
Yeah, it was very random. I actually got that job from, I shot a short film out in the California desert at a place called Bombay Beach a few years ago, and the actor that was in it auditioned for this, the Philosopher King, online, and through the audition process, the director saw the film and was like, I love the look of that. I want to look into this cinematographer. And so he tracked me down, and then I got the job, and then Will, the actor in it, also got the job as well, who's an Australian actor living in LA. And so then we were in Sweden. We were the only ones that knew each other beforehand. But then Ray, the director of it, and Alex, a couple of people knew each other. But yeah, it was, most of us were just meeting for the first time, and it was an incredible, incredible experience.
Tell us a little bit about some of the LA Film Prize work you've done in the past.
Yeah, well, last year I remember getting sent a script that was written by Paul Peterson and Alexander Jeffrey was directing. It ended up becoming The Bespoke Tailoring of Mr. Bellamy, and we just had the most incredible, incredible time. I remember the first time I read it, I loved it. I loved every page of it, and didn't even realize that the lead character didn't have any dialogue and how interesting and visual it could be. And it was just really an amazing experience. And we went down, shoot all around the Shreveport area, and we were very lucky enough that it won last year's Louisiana Film Prize.
And so maybe because of that, you are now on three projects this year. It's like you're the good luck charm. People are like, oh, we want that. And of course, you've made such beautiful images. So let's talk more specifically about those three films, very different in style. The first one is Memoir, the one that Alexander did for this year's festival. So what was the approach for that film?
Alex is one of a director that's kind of raised on Star Wars, and he wanted a really Hollywood type Star Wars feel on obviously a limited budget. So we kind of approached it from what could we do with our lighting and how to keep it kind of a more slick type look. But I still wanted to give it a sense of naturalism, because we were shooting on a set, and I'm very cautious when shooting on sets and stages, like on a built set, that it can look too perfect. So I kind of like overexposed the windows a bit too much, because that's what would happen naturally as opposed to that. So I still wanted to ground it in like a naturalistic style, but yeah, we wanted a more kind of slick feel to Memoir, to give it that kind of more Hollywood type feel. It was a really small crew. We just had a little doorway dolly, which is one of those like platform dollies with the four wheels on it, and just like I was sitting on an apple box and just like had my grip run me around the corridors and stuff. So we didn't have any fancy, we didn't have tracks, didn't have a fancy like Panther dolly or any of that stuff. It was very basic equipment, and we just, you know, held steady and ran around the corridors. And there's some shots when I would jump off the dolly at the same time, you just have to, you know, plan them out and make sure you don't shake the camera too much, but try to be as smooth as possible.
And what camera were you all using for that one?
We shot on the Red Dragon.
All right, so now let's talk about American Pride, a little different kind of story, a comedy dealing with a social issue. What was the approach there?
Well, American Pride was an interesting one, because they contacted me through, obviously, from Bellamy last year and Tamsin, and I really wanted to work with them. And I read the script, and it was really interesting, and I thought it could be a lot of fun. It offered very interesting challenges of, A, that we're shooting over the course of like 3 days, but it's all supposed to be one day, and most of it's exterior, so it's keeping consistency in lighting to try and make it seem like, yes, this all is happening on one day. So that was a challenge. And the main challenge was, like, I didn't even get to, I think I met Tamsin for like an hour and a half before we actually got to shoot. So we hardly did any pre-production on that film, because she was busy acting in Salem, so she was kind of full-time there, so it was hard to... it was hard to pin her down to do a lot of pre-production. So a lot of that was just trusting each other on set and coming up with the feel and what I kind of spoke to her about what I thought I saw the film and the organic nature of it and some of the oneers that we attempted. We just kind of through blocking and I kind of said like how I thought that it could work to try and make an organic feeling film. So, and yeah, I think it worked. It was, but that was a lot of trust involved to have not done any pre-production to be able to make a film with a cohesive visual style.
I feel like that one had more handheld shots or at least more less smooth camera moves.
Yeah, I definitely wanted it fluid. I almost wanted it sort of a documentary style handheld, but then hence why we did some like oneers in there, even though they cut into the oneers, but like, except for the end one, I think they cut into once. But yeah, I wanted it all handheld. I didn't want it too static on that one because I just wanted more of a documentary as if it is, you know, we're kind of observing the day and the dramas of the day as it happens.
And you all had that beautiful China ball sequence at night at the end. Talk a little bit about that and the colors you use for that.
Yeah, well, we just kind of, like, we got a whole bunch of China balls and put them all up, and we kind of just picked out the colors that, like, read on camera the best, and then I just kind of did through a bit of a moonlight wash over the background and the foreground and stuff, but it was just kind of just looking at what colors, what kind of China balls we had and what looked good, and yeah, just went with it.
And what camera were you using for that?
Again, that was the Red Dragon, yeah.
All right, and then the other film that you did was the Versus. That one, Civil War era in a wooden house kind of thing. So tell us about the approach there.
Yeah, I mean, the Versus we wanted, the Versus had its own troubles in the fact that was so much dialogue and only like 2.5 nights to kind of get all of it. So it was a really intense shoot to get it all, and night shoots are always a different beast. So we the visual style like Jensi and I wanted there, we just kind of wanted it, yeah, a lot of kind of static shots, and we kind of used the kind of Tarantino tension that he built in like Hateful Eight, you know, just tension in a room. So we looked at, and I watched quite a bit of Hitchcock of like just the how to create tension and stuff like that. And so, but I wanted a very natural feel. Like, I went a little bit with the moonlight to be a bit exaggerated, just to create throw a bit of blue color in there. But then I wanted it to seem like, and it was like mainly lit with candles and, you know, just exaggerating the candles with artificial light. So I wanted that kind of natural feel, but I wanted that the camera not to move too much, just to let the performances create the tension.
And you had some of that nice orange and blue contrast in that one.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of mixed color temperatures, like not to the extremes of like the Michael Bay type, you know, that Hollywood teal and orange type feel. But this, yeah, I do love a good mixed color temperature, and I felt like with the candlelight interiors, I really enjoyed that, you know, just having a little bit of blue wash through. So yeah, I think it works, and it just creates an interesting visual image.
You mentioned studying Hitchcock for tension. How do you create tension visually?
I mean, it's almost he's a tough one. He's great to study, but it's almost impossible to replicate because he's just such a master. But I think it's all in the performance, and it's knowing when to use what shot. Like, I don't like to go in close just like at any point. Like, you've got to use your close-ups as at certain points of the story when it's getting to that point. Like, you don't want to do it early because otherwise you already know. You really get to see the actors' faces and you get to kind of, yeah, it gives away too much. So you've got to know the points of when you want to cover in a close-up or when it's a wide to kind of show the space more. So you just have to really study the script and really find what points are the ones you want to cover in wide or close to help the tension.
And based on your prior answers, I'm guessing this one was also shot on a Red.
Yeah, I mean, I it's funny because Alexander Jeffrey owns a Red Dragon, so I think all three of them were rented from him, I believe. So yeah, I shoot a lot on the Red Dragon. I normally shoot on the Alexa a lot because no one lets me. I own a big Super 35mm camera, but no one lets me shoot on that anymore because it seems to be harder to shoot on film, which is disappointing. But yeah, all these were on the Red Dragon, which is, you know, you've got to. A lot of people have Reds and a lot of people shoot on it, but you've really got to know how to mess with it. Because if you shoot just the camera settings as per, like, factory settings, it can be sometimes an unpleasant image. So you've got to work with it a bit. Like, all of these three films, I definitely created my own, like, looks inside the camera to try and make it more specific look to what I find pleasing.
Besides the camera, do you have a favorite piece of equipment, your go-to item?
I like a good lens. Like, obviously, Lifine lens is so important. We used on the Versus and Memoir, we use ultra prime lenses, which are fantastic, and I use super speeds on American Pride, because I find using old lenses on these digital cameras are really great, because it can sort of dirty it up a little bit, and with digital it's nice to be not as clean, you know. So like, but the ultra primes are a good mix of still really sharp lens, but they still have some of the old characteristics of like lenses that have been around since like the 70s or 80s. So I really find lenses to be important. And besides that, I still use my light meter. A lot of people make fun of me because, you know, with digital you can kind of look at the monitor, but I'm a cinematographer that learned shooting on film, and I find the process of lighting a scene and just knowing where my stop's at so important. So I still use my light meter on every scene, and I find it crucial to kind of know where I'm at. And I think cinematographers nowadays that are learning on digital that have these beautiful monitors, they should still learn like how to use a light meter and still go trust their eye and their light meter instead of looking at a, you know, 4K monitor or something like that.
Last question for you, and this will probably be the most difficult one. Of all the people you work with, you know, lots of great people, one person to acknowledge something distinct that they did, not the directors, just something, maybe someone normally doesn't get the spotlight, you thought this time they did a great job or interesting work, one contribution, what would it be?
Oh, that is a tough question. I'd definitely have to give a shout out to my gaffers and focus pullers on these films, because we did some pretty low light stuff and it was a lot of work. But I'd have to probably say the thing that stands out in my mind is Kaylee Fleming's performance in Memoir. That little girl, she's 8 years old. She played young Rey in The Force Awakens, in Star Wars The Force Awakens. But we didn't quite, you know, we knew she was obviously experienced because she did a Star Wars film, but we didn't know how it would be to work with her. And I'm not exaggerating when I say she's probably the best actress I've ever seen work, like up close. And just, like, we had a scene, there's a scene where she has to deliver French dialogue, and she first take absolutely nailed it. We had a French translator on set who was like, that was perfect. And she didn't even, she couldn't speak French. She just studied the syllables on how to pronounce each word that she did. And like, I've been lucky enough to watch like hundreds of, you know, actors, including, you know, Oscar winners and this and that over my career. But there was just something about watching her performance on set that was just, it truly was amazing, and she's going to be a big star one day, and she's in it for the right reason. Like, she just truly loves acting and performing, and it was incredible to watch her on set work for such a little, like, you know, she's so small, a little 8 year old, and she's just such an incredible force of an actor.
Wow, high praise. Well, thank you so much, Joel.
I want to take a quick break from our coverage of LA Film Prize 2016 to thank you for listening to the Encevides podcast. We've had all kinds of intriguing guests on this show. Some have won Oscars and Emmys. Others have won a National Book Award and a Pulitzer, just to name a few. Recent guests from the past few months include the screenwriter for Disney's Bridge to Terabithia, the director of The Blind Side and Saving Mr. Banks, and an effects supervisor from Interstellar. You can find those episodes and more by visiting our site, podcast.encevides.com, or search for the Encevides podcast on iTunes and hit that subscribe button. That way you'll make sure to get all the episodes as they come in. All right, now let's get back to our coverage of LA Film Prize 2016.
We are talking to Jency Hogan, the filmmaker behind The Versus. You've worked on a couple of short films in the Civil War era, and The Versus is in that vein. How do you feel it is a progression from your prior work?
The Versus is different. It's a little racier. It makes you sit on the edge of your seat a little bit more. It's got more male energy. I made it for women again. I make all my films for women. Like, the idea is that make more roles for women, strong women, heroes, women that have to be a hero in the moment, women that, you know, are relied upon to go, like, collect inner strength and overcome something great. I feel like The Versus is about that, a woman overcoming her fear to, get rid of evil, you know? And so this film is about, you know, dark versus light. And it's, in the end, I won't tell you what happens because you might see it. So you have to watch the verses.
You have to watch it and find out
what happens. But I want to make more roles for women that empower them and make them the hero, you know, of the story. And my dream is to make a Civil War drama, either a TV show or a film that champions African-American women and their strength during the Civil War.
You've worked with one of the filmmakers here, Alexander Jeffries. He directed one of your past shorts. He's got a film here.
Yeah, Alexander Jeffries and I have become good friends. We'll probably work together for a long time. We're actually doing another film together in the fall called Warmed Over. But he is a treasure chest of talent. He works as a first AD a lot on my projects. And With My Soul, we co-directed this. He works as an AD. And he always has great notes and fun things and keeps us on schedule. It was night shoots. It was tough on this one with the verses. And it was really, really intense. And he is amazing at so many things and giving me little tips like, hey, you should do this, you should do that. You know, he's a really great person to have on your set.
And I understand that one of the actors from your prior short, With My Soul, he wrote this one. He has a bigger role in this film. Talk about how your collaboration has expanded over the past few months.
Robert Cassiello is amazing. He and Bob Butler wrote the verses. You know, he worked on With My Soul with me, and he's a great actor, and he had an idea. You know, I told him I wanted a small cast film. Set during the Civil War, and he said, I think I have an idea. Do you mind if I run it by you and write you up a little rough draft? And I was like, sure. So he and Bob, I think, started collaborating about then, and they presented the verses to me. And I was very blown away because it was very contained, all within one cabin. I was like, I can do this. Because With My Soul was so massive, and it had so many people and a lot of stuff. And this is more contained in a small space the whole time. I was like, I can pull this off. Because, you know, it's hard to make short films with this of this quality. They're very expensive. So when you do two in 1 year, I was like, how is that going to happen? And somehow I've managed to make two in less than a year with My Soul and then this one. And I feel like, wow, like, I don't even know how it happened, but I know that Robert was a huge part of that. And his acting in this is just riveting. It will blow your mind. He's so good in it.
Are these films that you're financing on your own or you're bringing in co-financers?
It mixes up, you know, there's a different projects, different story. This story, I did it on my own. Aaron Hogan, my husband, is my biggest supporter, my biggest fan. He, you know, our first year of marriage was about 5 years ago. He would look at me and I'd be going in for prostitute number three again. And he was like, don't cry about it. Just go and make your own films. And I was like, oh, right. Duh.
So, what is support a guy, right?
Yeah. If you're in this industry, you have to have somebody who's really going to get your back and believe in you when no one else is really like championing you in those hard days where the bank account is really faltering or you've spent all your savings. And, you know, he has been so supportive. Like,
and you can only go out for prostitute number two or seven so many times, right?
Yeah, I was kind of beating my head against the wall as an actress. And I was like, these are not the roles I want. I want the romantic, like, Civil War dramas. I want the period pieces with the dresses and the, you know, drinking tea and, like, talking about real issues. And I wanted stuff that made me feel, like, empowered. And I really loved Dr. Quinn as a child. And I always remember thinking, like, oh, that's who I want to play one day. And there was no opportunity for that. So I made Madeline Zoyle because I wanted to be, like, a Dr. Quinn and, like, a Western type thing. And that was just the beginning of it. This has been a really fun journey, though.
Yeah. So bring some depth to it when people aren't bringing it to you.
Right. Exactly.
I want to mention something you mentioned in another interview. You said that one of your favorite things about being a producer is that you get to write checks for other people. And I think everyone who works creatively would be like, wow, this person is fantastic. I mean, to write the checks and be excited about it. So would you care to elaborate on that?
Yeah, there's something about that's really empowering to get to hire people and to do something that they, you know, they spend a lot of time in school doing this. And I spent 20 years as an actress hardly ever getting paid, and the paychecks just don't come that often. And you're doing your passion, and you're waiting tables, and you're driving Uber, or you're doing whatever you're doing just to make ends meet, right? And so when you get to pay somebody to do what they're passionate about, there's nothing like that in the world. You're making their dreams come true. You're putting them into a place where they can then maybe get another job. on With My Soul, the film before the Verses, I gave, I think, maybe 7 or 8, maybe 10 first-time jobs to people. Now, I didn't get to pay them, but they got their first speaking role in a film. And how cool is that? Or, like, people who want to do, who want to, like, make a huge career out of cinematography or want to be directors or ACs or whatever, getting to write a check, even if it's for a little amount of money, just makes me feel like, oh, this is what I was born to do. I was born to empower people and give them the job that they've dreamed of. And so as a producer, you get to do that. It's like a great job. I love it. I love producing. I'd love to produce for more people. Even if it doesn't fit my genre, I would still do it for people if they wanted to hire me. Someone just hired me for the first time to make their short film, and I'm doing it in October.
Congratulations. What's the name of the short?
It's called Warmed Over, and it's a film about a woman who is a hoarder and her daughter and the journey of what that's like living with a hoarder mom and finding out why people hoard and kind of that idea. It's a women's kind of women-dominant script by Sam Fisicaro. And she is co-producing it, and she wrote it, and I'll be directing it. And so that's my first time to ever be hired as a producer. So it's like, hopefully that turns into something. If you want to have a short film that features you as an actor, approach me and see, and I can show you what the budget is, and we can work together, and you can pay me to make your film.
Okay, great. And going back to the Verses, it has a sense of spirituality to it, as do your other shorts. It seems like that's an important aspect of the story. Anything you wanted to add on that note?
I'm a very spiritual person. I have a really strong relationship with God, and I believe that He's the only reason why I'm able to do any of this in the first place. I feel like when I set foot at producing, I really didn't know what I was doing, but the doors that opened for me, it can't be explained by anything natural. It has to be kind of supernatural or out of this world, because I've never had open doors like that in acting or any other thing that I've done in my life. I literally feel like something it has to be because of God or a higher power that I'm able to do what I'm doing, because it's with the level of budgets that I have and what I've been working with, it feels like the projects have just been better than what I've had to work with. And that's only because the things have been organized almost like synchronicity or serendipity. That happens to me a lot, where I just set my foot forward and the door opens. So I feel like that's not about me. That's something higher than me, you know? And so all my films are to awaken, or I want to awaken the possibility there's something bigger and there's something spiritual going on.
Your good guys quote scripture, but also your bad guy for the first time, which was an interesting, unexpected development. What was the thinking for that?
The idea is that you could use anything that you want to and twist it, you know, and this guy, you hate him because he does twist it, you know, and he really, really twists it. So, yeah, pretty intense. You can't believe what's happening when you're watching it. You're like, whoa, that's creepy that people could do that. Like, take it out of context, take the Bible out of context. And I think people do that a lot. They think that the way it's written is not right or something, but you could take anything and twist it if it's not read in context, let's say.
You all mention a couple verses in the film. Is there one key verse that you want people to remember that will help them understand or better appreciate the film?
Well, darkness is always overcome by light. And so the last scripture in the film says it all. It's Psalm 92, verse 7. And it's kind of like the last punchline of the film. But the verse 7 is very important because, first off, 7 is a number for completion. And it talks that the wicked shall perish like the grass. But basically it's saying that the wicked will always lose and light will always win. It's really powerful in that moment. So that's my favorite verse from the film. It's on the little bags. We have these little goodie bags. That's the film. That's the verse I'm passing out to everybody. They will probably know. They may or may not ever read it or anything, but it's the verse that's kind of carrying the film.
And at least we'll get some vintage candy out of it, right?
Yeah, it's old fashioned candy from the era. I'd researched lemon drops, anise. There's some peppermint sticks. There's I said lemon drops. I forgot the other ones.
Is it ginger?
Sassafras, ginger snap, root beer. Yeah, there's all those different kinds of candy at my booth. So people are enjoying it.
We are here with some of the filmmakers from Ya Albi. Hello.
Hi, my name is Christine Chen, director, writer, co-producer.
And I'm Diana Rose. I played Aya.
And you were also nominated for your performance.
I was, thankfully, yes.
Lovely work you did with that. We'll talk about the film in a moment, but first, tell us a little bit about your background as a filmmakers and performers?
So I've been making films since I was a kid, but I would say I started getting serious with it in undergrad and then took it to the next level when I started my company in Austin called Moth to Flame. So I now do it full-time. Production house in Austin, Texas.
So you've submitted to the film festival in the past, correct?
Yes. So I've submitted 3 times to the Louisiana Film Prize, and all three for three, been in the top 20 of the Louisiana Film Prize. So.
Just for the listeners, do you want to mention the other ones?
Sure. So for the year one that we ever got in, which was also top 5, was A Bird's Nest. Second year was 2 Roads, and then this year is, yeah, Albie.
And I want to mention that you also helped produce The Importance of Sex Education, right?
That's correct. I was also, I actually helped produce 3 films this year, one that did not get in, but Importance of Sex Education, I was producer and a first assistant director on it, yeah.
And that one actually won the actress. So that's quite a track record. One of your actresses gets nominated, the other one ends up winning. Was there something that you helped do to bring out those performances?
Well, I would say for The Importance of Sex Education, that was all Liz Powers. She was the director for it, and she knew exactly what she wanted. We originally wanted to co-direct it, but since she wrote it and she was so personally tied to it, I knew that she had to tell the story. So I just made sure that the right people were on the team.
Well, tell us what it was like working with Kristen as a director.
It was an absolute honor. I saw A Bird's Nest 2 years ago. They sent it to me. And from that moment, I wanted to work with Christine. And I was absolutely honored when she came to me with this idea. And she really delivered. I just told her earlier today, I respected her and looked forward to working with her for so long. And now after working with her, I can't even say enough words about how amazing the whole process, the production, the care she took with the topic, with the writing of me, of the other actors. It was an incredible experience, and I love her. So I'm grateful to her and to Adam, who also produced.
In this story, you play, I want to say it's a Syrian who has come to the country. Talk about trying to convey that immigrant experience. Is that something that you can relate to or your family can relate to in some way?
Absolutely. My father and I immigrated to the States when I was young from Cyprus. And as an immigrant, I definitely related, but my family is part Greek and part Syrian. And the past 5 years, the war has been going on in Syria. The refugee crisis has gotten worse and worse. And it's definitely a topic that affected me. To be able to portray Aya and a portion of that story was very important and special to me. For a while, during rehearsals and leading up to filming, it almost became too important and stressful because of the topic.
Do you have family who's faced similar sort of things?
Absolutely. Yeah, I still have family over there. I have family that has gotten refugee status, and I have family that's been killed in Syria. So definitely means a lot to me to be able to share the human quality of what they're, who they are and what they're going through. It's not just, you know, a number. It's a person. And it was special to me to get to do that and to do it in such a way that the subtlety of it, I guess, is what I was really grateful for. We weren't trying to say one thing or another. We were just trying to show a glimpse of a person's life, and this is what it is. This is what she's going through. And that's what I was talking about. I was feeling anxious leading up to it, but that's what really brought me back down, is just like, no, this is just Aya right now in time. This is what she's going through. It's not about the overall topic or a political statement. It's just, who is she? What's happening? And yeah.
This is a complicated topic, certainly one that comes up in the news from time to time lately. Talk about the challenges of trying to tackle such a complicated, challenging topic in dramatic form.
So for me, it was a lot of research. This is the first film that I did a lot of research. And it wasn't just research through news channels. It was also research through Diana's parents really helped out a lot, giving us feedback, trying to make sure that this is something that is believable, something that they feel like could happen. And just little subtleties. I really, really listened to Diana, and Diana really did a good job asking the right questions that would make sure things are culturally sensitive. The story itself is actually a mix of it's an immigration story, really. It's really for anybody who's been anywhere abroad, somewhere different, that they can't speak the language or they're just new and they're fish out of the water. And less so about the crisis itself, and more so just that anybody who's ever felt this way, what are the issues that they deal with?
I would say, yeah, focusing on the subtlety of the story instead of the overall implications of the crisis and the war and political aspects really helped bring out what we were trying to in the story, instead of trying to say anything, which wasn't our goal. Our goal was just to highlight the humanity of a fish out of water and immigration. And Christine did a great job with that and integrating the story believably to what's going on.
I liked how you all included some of the statistics about the Syrian refugee issue on your promotional material. Did that and the film itself lead to any kind of conversations?
Well, we did a lot of research individually together. We discussed it. So we had looked at those statistics. We had also looked at what the refugee process is like, the years that it takes to apply and go through it. So in doing that research, we learned a lot. So it felt important to just pass on what we learned too, in a way that others that may not even look into it can just look at and say, oh, okay, I didn't realize that. It's good to know, or now I know.
And Christine?
Yeah, we had the booth and where we were passing it out, and it started conversations. That was a cool thing. I wouldn't say everybody we stopped by agreed with everything, but they at least stopped by and were intrigued and thought about the topic enough to ask questions. And that's really, if we can achieve that, that's all we can ask for. Because we're not saying it's wrong or right. We just want people to realize that it exists, that it is an issue, and that it's important to think about it and realize it's happening.
Yeah, and to have a dialogue, start a dialogue, right.
I thought it was great also that we didn't really come at it from one point of view. You know, there's other characters in the story, and no one is bad, no one is wrong. Everyone has their point of view, and they're right in their own mind. And I think we did a good job showing that everyone has their perspective and they have it for a reason, and that's okay.
I completely agree. Every single character for me represented some side, but I wanted every single side to be represented because that's how the world is. There's no one right side. And I really hoped that that's how people saw it. And I think a lot of people, that's what people came up to us and thanked us for, was that, hey, you weren't beating us with how we were supposed to think. You wrote a story that allowed us to think for ourselves and to ask ourselves important questions.
We are here with Tyler Corey and James Crawford, the producers for Native. Hey, guys.
Hey there. How you doing?
And James.
Hello.
You guys have worked together in the past on prior projects. How did you all come to work together and build your team?
Well, I was actually going to act in one of James's short films a couple years ago. And so then from that, I met Travis Champagne because James was already producing for him. And then I started producing our last two short films. And now we're just one big happy family.
Yeah, one big happy family, definitely. And I met Travis a while back. He was emailing me about an audition for a short film that I was doing, and we just kind of kept in touch from there. Then we did The Sound of Trains like 4 years ago, something like that. That was our first one that we did for the film prize.
What's it like prepping for such an elaborate short like Native?
Well, there's so much that goes into it, and we kind of thought this one was going to be sort of easy because it was the one location, but it was very difficult. Everything from, you know, getting your crew together to budget. And this one, we had to rent a wolf. We had to rent spacesuits. We had to build a spaceship. Yeah.
So all those things you mentioned, I'm sure people are curious. How does one go about renting a wolf? Call up 1-800-RENT-WOLF. Or
1-800-TWILIGHT.
Yeah. Our wolf was actually rented from Georgia. And this wolf was pretty famous. It had been in the
Twilight.
Yeah, he was in the Twilight movies. This wolf's day rate was a lot. I mean, he was. We paid more for the wolf.
A little crazy, yeah.
You were saying you paid more for the wolf than
any other actor that we. Yeah, than anybody, any crew, anybody got paid. The wolf was. He made more than I made on this. Was the wolf? So yeah, he was pretty much our star, even though we used him for one scene.
Are you sure you want to tell people this? Because now the actors will be like, hey, come on.
No, he got paid more than me. So I'm not. These actors can't be disappointed. No, but I mean, it's just that kind of thing that when you're trying to do a high concept and, you know, just it's making movies isn't cheap. And I mean, you can do it for cheap, but if you're trying to do something out of the box, it gets expensive and adds up quickly, you know? So kind of is what it is.
And you all are also doing a lot of shooting at Golden Hour, which is also expensive. You only have, 30-minute window, hour window some days. How did you all plan for that?
I mean, we did want to shoot a lot of it at Magic Hour, just because we were using anamorphic lenses, and we wanted, you know, natural light. We wanted it to be pretty, so we would try to shoot at Magic Hour at night when the sun's going down, and then we would try to get that to be our last shot in the morning when the sun's coming up. So we tried to get 2 Magic Hours, but, I mean, even that becomes difficult when you're shooting all night in the middle of nowhere, and
literally in the middle of nowhere, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, we tried to make it as pretty as possible, but it gets difficult. So, but I think we ended up making it work.
If I had to guess, I would say that this one was possibly the most expensive one at the LA Film Prize, the budget-wise. It just felt like that to me. I don't know the exact numbers, but I'm sure it's up there in cost for you all. You're putting that money into a short film where some people might try to put that into a feature.
Yep.
What's the business model for it?
Well, you know, it is an investment, and we've already had offers from, you know, people that have seen it to probably make a feature.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Some people might think that it's silly to spend what we spent on a short film, but, I mean, like I said, it's an investment.
I feel like there'd be a return on that investment in the future.
Yeah, so it sounds like you've got a full-length version of this in mind, or someone approached you and said, yeah, we could extend this if you want.
Yeah, we've talked with different people about making the feature, and we also have other projects that
we've got a full-length script for Jackdaw, which we did last year and made the top 5, and I'm working on writing a horror feature called Night Whistler that we're pretty serious about getting done sometime in the near future.
And so when you spend the money on a short film like this, you know, it's really good just for everybody's demo reel even. Even, you know, somebody might, an investor will be like, oh my gosh, this, you did this for this amount? Like, wow, you can make a feature for this amount, you know?
I'm of the school of thought where I would rather make a more expensive short film than a cheaper feature. Sometimes you can tell, you know, when someone tries to make a feature for, not saying you can do it because it has been done, but I just like having more money is nicer than not having enough money to pay people. And a lot of people don't want to be out there for 3 weeks when they're not getting paid and things like that. It's just easier when you have more funds, you know.
Certainly you all captured some nice cinematic moments that you might not have been able to get. I mean, you couldn't get the wolf for a little, right?
The one thing that we do have is we have all the nice equipment that we need. Yeah. So there's no money out of pocket for that.
Yeah, we shot with 2 Red cameras, Ronin, and, you know, like Jordan Bradley, our great DP, and then, but I mean, we wanted to shoot on anamorphic lenses, so we had to rent those from Hollywood. There were these vintage lenses from the 70s that we wanted to shoot on to give that look. So, you know, it was high concept and kind of adds up.
Yeah, and making a cheaper feature is a lot harder on you, for sure. I really honestly think Native looks like it could be like a $1 million film. Really happy with the way it looks.
What's the one tip that you would give to your fellow producers?
Oh, goodness.
No, I'm just kidding.
I think the biggest tip I could give is just, you know, put in so many hours. Because, I mean, even like even prepping for Native, I mean, I was working probably 6 hours a day, you know, 6-8 hours a day for a couple months before, but there's so many loose ends to tie up.
I'll back that up. And it's also treating people how you would want to be treated on set, and knowing that when you're a producer on a short film or something like super low budget, it's, you're not just a producer. Like, you help everybody out on set. Like, you do runs for mundane things and you don't complain about it and stuff like that. And just do it. Like, don't say, oh, I don't have enough money to do this or do that. Just do it, man. Or just find other people that want to do it and make a short film. That's what we did with Sound of Trains, and it turned out all right, you know? So find other like-minded individuals that want to make a film and just go out there and do it. Don't be too big for your britches when you're making short films, you know? Yeah. Just everybody's a PA. Like, yeah, right? That's the bottom line.
That should go on a t-shirt. Everyone's a PA. I like it. All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. And that concludes the interviews for part one of our Louisiana Film Prize 2016 coverage. Coming up next in episode two, we hear from an actor who's been featured in a couple of series like Salem and Peaky Blinders. He decided to take a shot at the LA Film Prize with some of his actor friends after hearing good things about it. So there's that. We have some visual effects artists talking about the effects in it. One of the directors of photography discusses his work in Fallen and so much more. So I hope you'll give that one a listen. If you like the show, if you want to support what we're doing here, why not be a pal and share it with your friends or someone who might appreciate it? Or just go on iTunes and hit that subscribe button. You could also leave feedback. What are your thoughts? What's your take on what you saw or what you heard here? You can leave a comment on the page or shoot an email. It's podcast@ncivitis.com. Music for the show, beginning and the end, it's provided by Rob Coslow for the song True Gemini. Until next time, let's make our future collaborations be better collaborations.